Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Black Urban America. This is Kenny Jones. We're here for another week. And how was your week this week? I'd just like to start off to say that Black Urban America airs Tuesdays evenings from 8 to 9 Eastern Standard Time. Saturday, we have Provocative Thoughts with Carlton Sneed. And his shows air from 8 to 9 p.m. Also, we have a marketing partnership program that's for self-employed and small business owners. And if you're interested, you could call 404-573-6144. That's 404-573-6144. Now, this marketing partnership program for small business owners and entrepreneurs, we help myself and another organization, the Bridge to Economics, will assist you in exposing your products and services nationally and internationally. So I'll tell you, take advantage of this opportunity. Tonight, we have Ms. returning Jasmine Monet X from out of California, and her topic tonight is going to be shootings. I don't know if it's police shootings in African-American communities or just shootings in general in the African-American communities.
Good evening, Ms. Monet.
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. How was your month?
It's been good. I just I took a visit to Detroit and took a look at the area, met up with some people down there. We're working on some things, and then I took a trip to Flint while I was out there and gave some donations and then hung out with them for a little bit and learned a lot about it. So that's a whole different topic.
Yeah, they still having that water problem in Flint?
It's horrible, yeah. We have people out there, and, you know, it's a primarily Black community. We got people out there that go, you know, 4 to 5 days with no showers. They have to go all the way to Detroit, which is about an hour away. You have to find a ride there to actually get clean water or take showers and whatnot. So it's still a really bad situation. You can't use that water at all.
So why do you think we haven't heard too much? I mean, it was a big thing a year ago. It was a big issue a year ago, but it just went silent, just like police shootings in African-American communities. We get riled up for a couple of days, all of a sudden, silence. Why do you think it's that?
In regards to Flint, it probably went silent because now there's boots on the ground who are actively looking to sue the Environmental Protection Agency and sue, you know, the governor of Michigan and sue a whole group of people now to get the people the health care that they need, because there's a lot of sick people who are suffering from Legionnaire disease and all kinds of stuff from drinking that water unknowingly, not knowing that it was poison. So they're trying to keep it, you know, quiet so that a bunch of people don't flock over there and it doesn't become this massive protest in the middle of the park. They're trying to gentrify that area right now and build a lake, actually, where the people are protesting, which is why they're stationed and they have tents where they're at right now. So I learned a lot about the history of Flint, the way it was built, and why there's no coverage right now. And another thing is that the people that are actually protesting down there want privacy, because the police were really going in and invading the camp and harassing them. Actually, one of the protesters that's actually out there right now had actually got arrested on camera while attending a town hall meeting, trying to get some justice for Flint. Yeah. So it's pretty deep. But, yeah, I made some good connections out there. And, yeah, like if you wanted me to come on the show at a different time and talk about that, I'd love to talk about it, because we need some Black representation over there. And that's the number one thing they were asking me, is if I could get some Black people to actually go there and sit on the ground with them and talk to them about it. They want the black militants, believe it or not, this bunch of white people, you know, just using the privilege the way they can. But they want the black militants because it's a black town.
Well, we could try to set that up for next month. Or when you come on every third Tuesday of the month, we could try to set that up, you know, with a couple of people from Flint could dial in and we could really talk about this situation and people could download the show from all over the country and internationally and really try to send them resources or try to connect or network with other community organizations around the country and internationally, because people from London, Caribbean, download these shows. Now, the police shootings. We could talk about that, you know, between now and the next time you come on the air.
That sounds good.
Okay? We definitely could do that. Now, your topic, Ms. Monet, police shootings in African-American communities. You know, there are some people that say that this is not a crisis. What do you think?
It definitely is, and it's starting to look more like a purge because we see it so often. And actually, statistically speaking, you know, we're three times more likely to get shot down than a white person or a person of a lighter complexion. And that's a heavy number. That means that this is actually frequently it's actually leading up to the point where we can calculate this and say three times more likely. That means that there's been a lot of shootings, a lot of deaths, innocent black deaths, for us to get that type of, you know, comparison or numbers, that type of correlation. So I really wanted to focus on a few police shootings in particular, especially in terms of police shootings in front of the youth or of black youth. Tamir Rice, and I wanted to talk about Ayanna Jones too. And Tamir Rice was a 12-year-old that was shot down in Cleveland, Ohio. His mom actually was very honest in her perspective on the police shooting, and she said there's no justice and that it is racially targeted, which is why they don't give her any airplay, because she was very honest. We didn't see any airplay about the Ayanna Jones shooting, which was the 9-year-old girl that was shot down in Detroit. Her home was raided in Detroit. They didn't knock on the door or nothing. They were looking for somebody. They raided the home. And what the police said is, while the grandma was saying, hey, you can't be in here, you know, what are you doing in here? They were wrestling with the grandma. They said that gun accidentally went off, and that's how the 9-year-old girl ended up getting shot in the forehead. So I wanted to highlight that because it's the number one thing I want to highlight is how ruthless the police shootings have been, which is why I call it a purge. And I read an article, and they called it a black epidemic, which is true, you know, because it's happening frequently all over the country. You know, it's happening everywhere. But at the same time, I say purge because it does seem extremely targeted, and it no longer seems accidental. You know, why is it that they're constantly responding with guns and not tasers? Why are they not responding with pepper spray? You know, why are they not following the training that they say they're quote unquote supposed to have? So I wanted to kind of talk about a few things on that. And if I could speak freely.
Go right ahead. Like I told you, it's your platform.
All right. Well, I wanted to highlight first that I'm not a fan of cops, and I'm not a fan of the Blue Lives Matter movement. It's not necessary because the police deaths have actually gone down by like a crazy number, like 40% in the last 5 years. So the Blue Lives Matter movement is just an illusion. So if you think that you really have to be concerned about police life, that is not necessarily true. Can I say that there's 1,200 people that get killed by cops every year? Let me throw that statistic out there first. And there was only about 160-something cops that died from between 2011 and 2015. So that's a very large gap when it comes to comparisons and killing. So I'm going to start from an overall scope first because I like to give out numbers. But zooming in a little bit more on the black killings in particular, we've seen this year or within the last couple of years, we can get shot for holding our hands up, for, you know, reaching for our wallet, for laying on the ground, you know. Just recently, there was that pregnant woman in Seattle that was shot. She was several months pregnant. Her name was, let me make sure I get it right, Charlena Lyles. She was several months pregnant, and she had a mental disability. She was staying in a transitional housing facility. It was her and her three kids. She had actually called about a potential robbery that was happening in the area. The police showed up. She didn't really know who they were, and, you know, she does have some mental trauma, and they have that history of her having mental trauma. So they knew about it. They show up. She has two shears in her hand, two knives, as they describe it, and they said that, you know, she had the knives up and because she was confused. The cops put the guns up, and she actually dropped the shears, but she ended up getting shot down anyways and killed in front of her three children. Which also means that, in particular, we haven't really heard news on whether she was able to keep the baby or not. But, you know, because she was shot down the way she was, the baby probably died too. So they killed two people. And in essence, they're making this case now. I want to put this out there. They're going to make this case that the lady was, you know, she had mental issues and she was crazy and all this stuff. They have all the history, so don't believe anything that the news and the media is putting out right now, because I've been reading all the articles on this. But we're seeing a consistency in the ruthlessness of the police. As a police officer, when you encounter any pregnant woman, period, you should not be looking to raise your guns. But here's the catch. They actually, those Seattle police officers, do not actually have to carry pepper spray and tasers and other alternatives. So all they had on them was guns as a means of self-defense. There was two cops, and there was only one pregnant lady with her three kids. Why would they shoot her? Ruthless, right? Tamir Rice with the fake gun, the 12-year-old with the fake gun, shot him down. Ruthless, right? These are things that we're seeing, that the ruthlessness that is being portrayed to innocent black shootings, which is why I'm highlighting this right now, because it's something that we need to point out. These cops are ruthless when it comes to us. They are trained to be ruthless when they come in our neighborhoods. Ayanna Jones, the 9-year-old that was shot in her home in Detroit, shot by the police in the forehead and died on the couch. Actually, they left her, didn't even call an ambulance or anything. But that's a different story. They just left her to die, like they did Philando Castile. We're seeing this ruthlessness from these cops, and which is why I say it's a purge. When it becomes a purge, when it becomes ruthless. When you apply that element to it, you know, can we call it a purge? Do you think that we can call it a purge? Would be my question to you.
Yeah, it's a purge, all right. I call it more than a purge. I was just looking at the pictures of men and women in 2015, and I see an increase of African-American women getting shot. We always thought it was just the brothers, African-American men. Because this has been going on since I was a teenager. This is nothing new. This has been going on since I was a teenager. That was many, many, many years ago. But now, in the last, I said, 3 to 5 years, it has been an increase of African-American women also getting shot by police. In your perspective, why do you think, you know, the police always had a negative relationship with the black community? Going back for decades, and when President Obama, was president, he was supposed to change that atmosphere, give specialized training and what have you. Tell me, why do you feel? What is your perspective on the reasons why there's a negative relationship between us and the police?
Well, that starts from even the formation of the police to catch slaves. When you have that type of legacy ingrained into a system or into a group of individuals, that's not going to die out. I don't care how many outsiders you may add in. You know, it's usually about who you know when it's that type of work. You know, you hire the person that you know and you're closest to, you know, and there's a common theme in, police departments. We always see the leaks of the racist texts and stuff like that, because that is the legacy of the police, period. And in terms of Obama actually have trying to propose reform and whatnot, how do you reform a racist group that was meant to catch slaves, that was strict or that was based on a very KKK type of mentality? How do you reform that? You can't. As a black man, you can't. They don't take orders from black faces. They can do anything they want to. And we saw it because Obama had many chances, even in the case of Trayvon Martin, many chances to actually get guilt, you know, make that Zimmerman guilty. But he didn't. He didn't use his power in that light. So I consider Obama to be irrelevant in so many instances as a black man, because he did not use the power that he had or the platform that he had in the right way to actually help and progress our community. What is reform going to do? You can't reform the mind like that. You really can't. I think that our relations with the police have been bad simply because it is a blue gang. It's the legacy of the KKK. And I know people like to say there's good cops in there and there's people that really want to help, but how can you help when you're protecting the law and a system that is built on Jim Crow, literally?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have paper and factual evidence. We have evidence, concrete evidence you can hold and see every day and read every day. We see it every day. We have evidence pointing all back to Jim Crow, pointing to certain parts of the Constitution that doesn't even apply to black people. So how can you want to protect us in that force? I mean, like, that's why I always say, like, for instance, I mean, we really, as black people, we really can't, we shouldn't be really focusing so much on establishing a relationship with these police officers. Honestly, we should be focusing more on just protecting ourselves and the people within our neighborhoods by learning the law for ourselves. We can't be relying on them. They already broke
I think you have a caller. I think you have someone that wanted a question. Yes, 414-722. You have a question or a comment?
Okay.
Hello, this is Black Earth America.
Hello?
Yeah, cool. Hello, Black Earth.
Are you guys talking to me?
Yes.
Yeah, you're on.
A comment or a question?
I was just observing and listening. You know, I just tuned in. I thought it was, you know, I was late, but I just tuned in and I just caught the end. I appreciate the Queen what she said as far as we need to work on our own relations and stop trying to work on having good rapport or good relations with them and protect our own selves.
Yeah, that's peace.
You know, we
power
have a good
right
relationship.
There.
We got a good rapport with our own. With our own stuff, we won't need nobody to protect ourselves.
Exactly.
No, they just asked me my comment, how I felt. I guess I'm live.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm on the air.
Yes, you're live, right on the air, brother. Thank you for your comment.
Yeah, my friend was asking me, was this my level?
Yeah, well, you know, yes, well, what, you know, on a lot of automobiles, press one if you have another question. You know, in a lot of police automobiles, it says that we protect and serve, we have courtesy and professionalism with the community. How you feel about some of those statements that are written on these police vehicles?
I absolutely believe that they protect and serve, but it's who they protect and serve that I have a problem with. They definitely do their duty, and I'm hearing a little echo. Sorry about that.
Okay, good. I don't hear an echo.
Okay.
I don't hear you.
Okay.
I don't hear you feedback.
Okay. But I was saying that I believe that they protect and serve the people that they're supposed to protect and serve, and that is, and I believe they're protecting and serving their legacy of white supremacy.
So, do you think the whole law enforcement agency is like spearing on and protecting serving white supremacy from the court system all the way down to the police officer?
Yeah, I think they're a joint force. Anything that's judicial, I consider to be a protecting of white supremacy. Because in the judicial system, we lack justice. We don't get justice through the judicial system. We have to protest. We have to kick. We have to scream. We have to get hit with water hoses. We have to get shot down to get attention. So, absolutely, they're all in cahoots with one another. And if we ever look at the politicians and their background and their history, a lot of them were police officers, and a lot of them were serving, protecting and serving, as they say, in the military. So we see this common theme and this common intertwining because, you know, they make those connections and they network with them, amongst themselves. And we see that shift of power not only going into the police force but going into the courtrooms, going into your local Congress, you know, until it reaches the White House. You see, it does all intertwine and connect. They are absolutely protecting and serving. They're absolutely protecting and serving white supremacy. And it's our job to counter that by protecting ourselves as black people. This law was not built for us. So we have to learn the information. We have to see the formula, which is why I wanted to talk about the shootings that I talked about and the ruthlessness of it, which leads to the Black Purge. We have to pay attention to these things so that we can look at what's happening and protect ourselves and our children and in the minds of the youth and the minds of everybody around us as black people. We have to form our own huddles, our own circles to counter that energy and to counter that force that they're putting in our neighborhoods. We can't be relying on their judicial system. Anything underneath the judicial branch is definitely a legacy of white supremacy.
So how can we do this, Jasmine? How can we get black folks all over the country to really organize among their neighborhoods and their communities and their circles?
The number one thing that we can highlight is we understand that I like psychology a lot, and I understand that oftentimes in the black communities, one of the things that we like is we like kind of like a theatric type of theme. We react to really extremes, like the shootings and stuff. You see us protesting more. You see us wearing Black Lives Matter shirts. We weren't doing any of that, even though the killings and stuff were going on silently, you know, even 10, 15 years before this. But we react to extremes, so we need to make every situation that happens to us, whether it be the cop pulling the person over for no reason, you know, we need to make everything seem that extreme to the point where everything, you know, because everything can lead up to them killing us. That's how we get the youth and everybody to react. We have to literally rile up our people in the best way we know how. And sometimes, you know, black people I understand I'm like 26, so a lot of the black youth I'm around, they don't necessarily like to hear the numbers, you know. They don't like to hear the percentages and things like that. But if I say, you know, you're three times more likely to get shot down, that sticks with them. So we need to present cases in extreme, black cases in extreme, and we need to completely defend our people. We can't be talking about black-on-black crime all the time. Every time we get shot down by a cop, there's always that black person that goes, well, the black-on-black crime is killing us more than the cops are killing us, right? We kind of need to, and Tariq Nasheed and Francis Press Welsing.
We are killing each other, though. I just want to say, we are killing each other. We are, which needs to stop. And that's how come I think those are one of the factors why police officers feel it is okay to shoot our women and our children and grown men and senior citizens down like dogs. Like I said, this has been going on since I was a child. Now, the thing is, I want to ask you, why do you think that we don't have a problem if shoot down an Asian man, shoot down a white man going in their communities, Hasidic Jews, or any other culture, just shooting them in cold blood? We don't hear that. There's no evidence of that. Why do you think they feel it's okay for them to come in our communities and shoot us down like dogs, but go in other cultures' communities and show them some type of respect and courtesy?
It comes down to the fact that even when arresting them. The reason that they feel comfortable shooting us down is because they feel threatened. they feel like no matter what, we are a threat. We have a more solid build than them. We have a little bit more of a warrior or a rebellious type of a spirit. We have a louder voice. We're a little bit more outspoken when we're getting arrested because that's just how we are as a people, you know. Honestly, we could vibrate on a much higher frequency or live up, you know. Because of our presence, we have certain swaggers or whatever that is very commanding. They feel threatened by that. So they have to do these things to make a statement, just like they used to take the toughest man in the slave quarters, you know, and make an example out of him. What do? You shoot him down. So then the rest of the community sees that, and they kind of lean back. They rebel a little bit, but only a little bit with their words. But the words get quieter, and they lean back a little bit, and they fall in line. It's the same. I believe it's the same process here, which is what they're justifying, which is why I call it a legacy and a black purge, because it's been a continuous purge arrived on other lands in the diaspora.
See, now, I don't think police are scared of us. I don't think the police are scared of us. Because if they were scared of us, they wouldn't come in our community with their chest sticking out and walking our neighborhoods, patrolling our neighborhoods with disrespect towards our residents. I don't think they're scared of us, not too much, not with that pistol on the hip. I might have a different spin, you know, because I mentioned some other subcultures. With the level of respect, that is the police supposed to show residents that they're patrolling a level of respect. And I feel that there is an absence of respect towards us because maybe we don't show that respect towards each other. What do you think about that?
I am refuting that. Because even when we showed respect towards each other, when we really showed respect towards each other, and let's use Black Wall Street as an example of that, because we did business amongst ourselves and we had our own neighborhoods, and there was like 80%, you know, black families with a full mom and dad household type of build.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding this, and they bombed us. So they constantly feel, that's why I say they constantly feel threatened by it. They constantly feel like they have to front. They put on this front when they come in our neighborhoods by holding on to their gun or puffing their chest out or laughing at us because it's the only time that they actually feel like they have some type of quote-unquote power over us is when they have that weapon with them or if they feel like if they don't do it, then they because they naturally are weaker, they're naturally built weaker generally, and they naturally don't have that presence, that commanding presence, they have to overcompensate for that. And they're taught to do that through intimidation training and all kinds of things. I know some police officers who are people who nearly became police officers who had to go through the intimidation training and that are taught that if you're in this type of neighborhood, most likely meaning black or a heavy brown type of neighborhood, then you have to react a lot more aggressive with these people. So it's the thing of they feel so naturally threatened by us that they will put on that front of being ultra disrespectful. They will put on this front of being, you know, oh, I'm big, bad, and I'm super powerful, and I'll shoot you down in a heartbeat. They'll put on this front because they're scared. They are so scared of us. That's where I'm going with it.
Well, what do you think is the psyche, since you mentioned it, you know, some people, what do you think is the psyche of the black police officers?
The black police officers that I encountered, like, for instance, since I'm in the Bay Area, I went to the Trump protest out here, and it was a lot of people out there. I saw a few black police officers, and I spoke to them because I don't like cops. I don't care if you're black or whoever. But they were saying that they saw it as an opportunity to oftentimes I hear the same thing of, I feel like I can give back to my community, or I feel like if I get in this uniform and I start to patrol, maybe they'll actually start changing once they see that they can do something different with themselves, you know? Or I feel like, or they'll say, like, I feel like I can help more youth this way when I'm in this uniform, you know, like they're kind of protected. They can protect it, you know, before they arrest them and incarcerate them, you know? And
yeah, well,
and
I
it's the thing.
I grew up with some police officers. And I have to say that most of the police officers that I grew up with were African-American. They all went in with that same idea. And within 2 years, and I'm telling you what I know, within 2 years, their whole persona changed. Their whole psyche changed. Because why? Now, like you said, the colors, they belong to the blue wall, the wall of blue.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to rely on these white police officers sometimes to survive. So they really, it's no different, like you said, there's no difference between a white and black police officer. It's that blue uniform or gray uniform, whatever colors they're wearing now. But I got to say, the average black guy, black person, men and women now, that go into law enforcement, they do have that thinking, but it changed. It changed within 2 years, and they just some of them were just as worse as the white police officers, trying to prove that they belong.
Exactly, and that's the problem. We have to stop believing in white stories. That if we get in good with the white people, or we get in good with the law, then you're making it. Then you can actually come back and really help your people. You know, what has the law actually done for us to progress us? You know, and as a mass majority of people, you know, and it comes back to the thing, too, of it's just they sell us white dreams, you know. It's a white dream to be a police officer and to protect and serve in the military and stuff like that. That's not something that we necessarily is a cultural thing for us. You know, we're more like, let's do some sports, or let's work in, in foster care, or let's work in public health where we can help out community centers and things like that. They really have to feed us these white dreams, and that's the problem, because it's never the solution. It never works. I hope the people listening are hearing this. You know, if you can counter it, because we need, in the good cops, like I was, I know this is kind of going in left field, but I want to talk about a good cop, too, because I honestly don't believe there's such thing as a good cop. I believe there's such thing as a good person that sold themselves to the blue uniform. But the good cops are usually the rebels, the ones that end up speaking up and telling us the information that we need to know about what's really going on behind closed doors in that department or in that area, you know. It's never a person that actually sticks to the blue, because there's a blue code. You know, and knowing this and seeing the stories, and like you said, hearing about black officers who are thinking they're going to change neighborhoods, staying in there 2 or 3 years and then completely changing and becoming something else entirely, which is kind of like a monster, or fitting in perfectly and incarcerating our people and not caring no more. Or I know some black officers that are just like, I need to get out of this because it's horrible. I can't watch this and I don't want to be involved. And now I'm just going to tell you guys everything you guys need to do to protect yourselves from it. You know, we really need to just not engage and put our energy into that at all. We need to put our energy into absorbing the law for ourselves, absorbing the law for our communities, and protecting our own people amongst each other. You know, we really don't call the cops for much, honestly. I mean, what do you usually call the cops for? How often do you usually call the cops? It would be a good question.
I never called a cop in my life.
I hear you.
I could actually sit here and say, you know, and when people download this show and hear me say this, they're going to think I'm lying. I never called a cop in my life.
And why is that?
For them. I don't trust them. I'm going to tell you a story to support this statement. When I graduated from college, there was a big minority recruitment drive in my hometown. I'm not going to mention the town or anything. It was a big minority recruitment drive. They wanted more black men, I say men because it wasn't too many women, cops at the time. They wanted black guys on the force because white cops were really scared to go in these black communities because they were meeting a lot of resistance. You know, like I said, yeah. Where I'm from, cops were not respected. That's why I don't call cops. So now, my mother and father were no longer here, are Dr. King followers. They come from the Dr. King genre. They come to Dr. King philosophy. And I was there, I was saying, hey, Mom, check this out. I'm going to take the test, I'm going to take the police exam. I think about becoming a cop so I could change the thinking of how they treat us in our neighborhood. You know what my mother said? If you become a police officer, I will never respect you again. And these are Dr. King followers. And so from then on, my mother and father, like I said, they believe that they came from that generation of the work ethic, go to work and family, you know. So I'm telling you now that I had no reason to call a cop. If I had a situation, I'm going to handle it myself because my level of trust and police officers and law enforcement and the judicial system is nil. And because of the history, and like you was explaining in the beginning of the show, because of the history that our people have encountered law enforcement over the years, over the decades, over 100 years, has been very, very negative. It has not, even my friends that I grew up with that are police officers today, when I see them in that blue uniform, I never used to speak to them. But when they're in civilian clothes, you know, regular clothes, they're a different person. Like I said, that's why I asked you what you think of what the black officer have to encounter. It's a whole psychological and emotional as well as physical makeup when they put on that blue uniform or they go into that precinct where they serve and whatnot. And it is a following thing. And another thing I would like to add, I know it's a play. I'm sorry, guys. Another thing I'd like to add, I mentioned Asian Americans earlier and Hasidic Jews. Cops don't be going up in there shooting them down. If they got to go in there and respect them, they're going to make a call to their rabbi or to the Chinese guy leader. Or can we say, we come to arrest this person for that he's a suspect and so-and-so, or he could search, he could turn himself in. He can make that choice. We don't get to do that. And I think it's because a lot has to do with economics, because a lot of Asian communities own their shops, they have their own money, they have their own businesses, they hire each other. The city Jews, they own property, businesses, and what have you. So in this American economy, that is highly respected. So therefore, they have a different look upon those people than us. And with us, we always reaching out to City Hall, to the State Department, or the Feds for assistance instead of helping ourselves. So they really don't look, they look at us. Now, I'm going to tell you what a police officer, one of my friends told me years ago, they look to us as a burden. And let me tell you something, and we are making the correction system rich, they're richer, and they're private industry now. I forgot the number, the dollar amount of beds that costs to imprison. They're making nothing but money off of us. So it's like twofold.
Mm-hmm.
We're keeping the judicial system alive, as well as not having respect from other cultures that wear that uniform. And you're right. You know, we have to protect ourselves. We have to protect our neighborhoods and what have you. But that's a whole, but first, we have to start respecting ourselves. We have to start respecting each other. And we have to start building our family. Go ahead.
I just want to cut in real quick and say, another thing that the Asians and the Jews and everybody else does is they mind their own business. They keep their business. They don't talk about all
that's
the crime
true.
In their neighborhood and stuff like that. The first, that's why I have
true.
A problem when black people go, well, black on black crime, they're trying to compare police killing to black on black crime. We understand that's a problem amongst ourselves. Just like white people have
yes.
more crime than us, even ratio-wise. In their communities,
mm-hmm.
but they keep that hush-hush amongst themselves. If a police shoots a white person, like that black cop shot that six-year-old white boy by accident and got 40 years while other white cops got nothing. Let me point that one out because that made me real mad.
Right.
Yeah.
You know how many cops been convicted the last 10, 15 years for shooting a black man? One.
Yeah, I saw that.
One.
Yeah, I saw that. But one black guy,
what?
And it was actually that, yeah, it's bad. But I want to speak on the black cop, the black officer that accidentally shot that little white boy in that car because they were on a police chase. The dad was running away, you know, doing everything. Nobody knew there was a child in the backseat. So when that black officer's first time ever firing his firearm because he
mm-hmm.
saw reckless driving and whatnot, and he got 40 years for that. 40 years.
Wow.
Well, you like you said, all these white cops just walked away. And my thing is, if one cop's going to walk and you guys got this Blue Lives Matter and this blue code and blue gang going, then you better protect your blue gang. But it's a racial
mm-hmm.
targeted thing, which is a double-edged sword. So even as a black cop, I would like to say anybody aspiring to be a black cop associated with black cops, you need to understand that this is a double-edged sword dealing with the police,
yeah,
whether you're in it
sure
or you're
is.
Not.
Yeah, it is. And another thing I want to add is that another thing about that brother, he did not get 40 years for shooting someone. He got 40 years for shooting a white kid.
Exactly.
If that was a black kid, if that was a black 6-year-old, he never would have came to court. He probably got shared in Texas for a month or two. You know
exactly.
how many children? I mean, you just talked about this in the beginning of the show. You know how many black children have been shot down by cops over?
Mm-hmm.
I forget about that. Go history in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't go
mm-hmm.
to jail for 40 years for shoot, accidental shooting. He went to jail for 4 years for shooting a white kid. And I'm going to put that out there. And I don't care if nobody likes it.
It's true.
I think we
Go
have
ahead.
Another caller that might want to ask a question.
Okay.
Yes, you on the air with Black Up America 419 area code. Good evening. You on the air with Black Up America 419 area code 280? I guess not. Go ahead, Jasmine.
Yeah, so I really want to talk about black people, the things that we can do as black people and when we encounter the police. And I always say we need to take back that power that we give them when we call them ma'am or sir. You're taking yourself back to a childlike state. You don't have to call a ma'am or sir for them to do their job the right way. They lost that trust. They lost that respect. You want respect, you got to earn it. They have not earned that yet. The judicial system has not earned my respect. I don't call them ma'am or sir. They cannot shoot you down for not calling them ma'am or sir. That is not a requirement. So we need to stop
doing
that.
Well, let me ask you something. Can I ask you a question? How do you feel about, I think this happened last year, the kid in Dallas and the other kid in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, that talked to police officers? How do you feel about that?
They talked to police officers?
Targeted police officers.
Those shootings.
Dallas at Baton Rouge.
So I believe that because I watched some of their YouTube videos and stuff like that, one was Micah X and the other one was, I forgot, Gavin something. I forgot his last name. They were very pro-black and very openly pro-black and very fed up with what all the police shootings and all the cops walking around not guilty. I think that the shootings were wrong because they did not have targets. If you're going to do something really that extreme, make sure you have a target, because we've even seen with the Arabs, do all these random suicide bombings, just killing innocent people. It does not look good. It just looks like you're mad and you're just trying to take out everybody, you know? So if you really, I mean, honestly, I felt like, you know, if you're going to keep shooting down a certain people or a certain group of people after 400 years of slavery, yeah, expect to get shot up a little bit and expect for them, for some innocent people to die, because a bunch of our innocent people have been dying. I'm not saying it's okay, but I'm saying sometimes you got, they're going to fight fire with fire. But after they did those shootings, how many more shootings did we see in Louisiana and in Texas in particular? Not many. They kind of backed off and left them alone.
In fact, usually when we have a police shooting of a black person, we'll talk about for 2 or 3, we'll make a speech, we'll have a march, and then we'll everybody go home. But that stayed as on media for like 2 or 3 weeks, and that's the longest, besides Trayvon Martin, that's the longest I ever saw, like, highlighted, you know, police shootings in African-American communities or all the traditional media outlets.
And they realize that, you know, black people are nothing to play with. You see, when we start putting fire with fire, you know, because they provoked us first. You really have to provoke somebody for somebody to just say, you know what, screw it. I'm about to lose my own life in the midst of this. But I'm going to take out some blue uniforms. And what made me mad was Obama was taking down the flag like some heroes had died for those cops. But what about those poor black children that had been shot down way before that? No flags were dropped for them. You see, that's why I say Obama was irrelevant. He is just a pawn. He didn't represent nothing. Honestly, he didn't really represent much of a strong black man to me.
I think he had to, but you have to understand the background. Obama did not grow up in Chicago or New York or L.A., Compton in L.A., the South Side. I mean, he might have worked in the South Side of Chicago or Harlem, New York, or Atlanta, or Houston. Homeboy, you know, he grew up in Hawaii. You know, they showed a class, elementary class picture of him, and he was the only black person in the school, I mean, in his class. So, I guess when you go through that political process and you go to Harvard and you're a liberal, I think you take on that thinking process that we are the world. Well, I only got a minute or two left, so Jasmine, you could say some ending statements.
Okay, very quickly, I just want to point out that these have been ruthless killings and that a black purge is happening. So if you're in a black community or if you're not in a black community, you're in a community where there's a bunch of white faces around you, you need to huddle and find a group of black people that you can actively move around with in certain areas to protect yourself in case you ever do have encounters with the police, because those are going to be the people to protect you. Stop calling these cops ma'am and sir, because they need to earn that. Learn the law. There's a civilian law library. If you can Google it and you can learn simple pieces of the law, so when you're stopped for certain things, you know exactly what to say to get the police to leave you alone. And I practice this and I learn this and memorize it every day, and I could share it next time if you like. But ultimately, peace and power, the fight continues. Never stop fighting. Don't trust this Blue Lives Matter movement. Don't trust the cops. We can no longer trust the cops. You are 3 times more likely to get shot down if you are a black person. Keep that number in your head and realize that you are a target. It is a purge happening out here. They'll shoot you for any reason, even if you're pregnant, in front of your 3 kids. That's something to take into account.
Okay, Jack. I'm going to be calling you about a week so we can discuss how we could do this Flint thing, okay?
Okay. Okay, that sounds good.
All right. Okay.
All right. Peace of power, King. Thank you for having me
on. All right. You too, sister. All right.
All right.
that's another week, ladies and gentlemen. And, yes, you know, this is not a new phenomenon. This phenomenon been going on, like I told Jazzy, since I was a child. I come from a family that didn't trust police. I come from a community that didn't trust police. I come from a city that didn't trust police. And we all cannot be wrong. Most African Americans in the United States of America do not trust police. In fact, Africans from other parts of the world that resides here, that moved here, they say when they see police, they are afraid. They are actually afraid. So, yes, we continue to have targets on our backs, and we're going to have targets on our backs until, again, I say this every single week, until we start having our own and showing the world that we are self-sufficient, the American society is going to continue to treat us like this. Well, that's it, Black Urban America. As always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night.